You want Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's gets it. We checked the calendar, and Christmas is coming early. $99 is all you need to grab your favorite select 7-foot pre-lit artificial Christmas tree for the holiday season. And don't sweat what gifts to get Dad, because we've got up to 40% off select tools and accessories. That's how Lowe's celebrates Black Friday early. Selection varies by location while supplies last.
Well, our news time is 11:05. The Brooklyn Nets beat Indiana 129-101. Tomorrow, the Knicks host the Celtics, Rangers visit Vegas, and the Devils take on Columbus.
Here's your WOR Weather Channel forecast. Partly to mostly cloudy skies for us here overnight. Temperatures into the mid-30s. We're in and out of the clouds as we head through the day Thursday. It'll be colder. Highs only middle to upper 30s. Snow late Thursday night and into Friday, 1 to 3 inches of accumulation possible. Highs Friday, mid-30s. I'm meteorologist Ken Boone.
Your next update at midnight. Breaking news at once. Start your day with Len Berman and Michael Riedel in the morning, 6 to 10 tomorrow. Steve Greenfield, 710 WOR, an NBC News radio station.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Japan. Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, joins me because we are turning our attention to a headline, most recently in the Wall Street Journal. The headline is both alarming and reassuring. Rising threat from China pushes U.S. and Japan to deepen military cooperation. Subhead, the two allies are staging joint exercises to prepare for regional conflict that could spill over from Chinese aggression. We're joined by our colleague Scott Harold, senior political scientist at the RAND Corporation, and our guide to Japan. Scott, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. This decision to join together in exercises. Is this fresh news, or is this a retooling of what was status quo for many years from the allies? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John and Gordon. No, I think, John, the answer is it's a bit of both. It certainly has roots in some trends that have been going on since the mid-1990s, when China, in the what's referred to as the Third Taiwan Strait Crisis, fired ballistic missiles off of Taiwan's northern and southern coasts, alarming the United States, which sent two aircraft carrier surface action groups toward Taiwan, and which prompted Japan to recognize that the United States might call on it for support during a crisis that involved defending Taiwan against China. In 2015, you will recall, and your listeners will recall, John, the United States and Japan then updated their defense guidelines again to deepen integration and set up what was termed a bilateral planning mechanism. However, there is not in the U.S.-Japan alliance a standing command and control relationship that integrates the two militaries. We do have that with our allies in the Republic of Korea. We have a combined forces command, meaning one chain of command that can give orders to the two militaries. In Japan, however, because of the vagaries of the constitution that we wrote for Japan and the politics that those helped shape, we have not historically been able to interoperate in quite the same way or to set up a unified command and control. So what we're trying to do now is essentially get two militaries to operate a bit like one, as opposed to setting up a joint command. And so that's where we're starting to see some joint exercises that seek to really put the two allies in the same place and work through some of the kinks that might arise in an actual contingency where you'd say, oh, we thought that you would do X. Well, why would you think that? We're going to do Y and try to figure out what those X's and Y's are ahead of time so as to smooth the process out.
Gordon, you have a question for our colleague.
Scott, Prime Minister Kishida is planning to sign a reciprocal access agreement with Australia, which is not exactly a military treaty, but certainly goes to helping the two militaries work together. What is the status of this, and what do you see as the significance?
Well, the significance is, Gordon, as you know, the Australians have been a very close partner of Japan now for several years. You'll remember that back when Australia initially indicated that it wished to purchase submarines, One of the countries that was going to compete for that was actually Japan, and that would have been Japan's first large-scale export of a defense article. It didn't end up happening in the event. It went to France, and then ultimately has arrived with the AUKUS agreement as a US-UK system. But all along, Japan has regarded Australia as a key partner, a country they feel almost uniquely comfortable with after the United States, in large part because Australia is such a close U.S. ally. The Japanese feel very comfortable with them. The significance of the reciprocal access agreement is that it required Japan to make some changes and to waive the application of the death penalty in the case of Australian forces that might be operating in Japan for an exercise, and that on the off chance they conducted some or carried out some activity that would have led to a prosecution in Japan, Japan, which has the death penalty, Australia essentially said, we can't let our troops exercise in a place where if they do something wrong, they could be put to death. And so the Japanese and the Australians had to figure out a way around that. It appears to be good news that they have done so, because it will deepen the ability of the allies of the United States to work together. In other words, for Japan and Australia, even though they are not formal treaty allies, to substantially deepen their cooperation, something they've already been doing through the quadrilateral dialogue and a number of trilateral naval exercises. They will now be able to be on land and more integrated in that way.
Two telephone calls at issue. One, several days past, a hotline said to be planned for next year, this year, 2022, 2023, between China and Japan, for tensions, we're told, in the disputed waters. The second one, more compelling to me, on the eve of a 2+2 security talk between Japan and the U.S. This within these next hours, what is the ambition of that 2+2? Is that more about military exercise, or something happens?
Well, so for your first question, John, I think the direct military-to-military hotline that China and Japan have agreed to, it's important that your listeners know that this actually dates back to 2008. In the mid-2000s, there were tensions between China and Japan over their maritime boundary and undersea seabed resources, oil and gas, in the East China Sea. Those tensions flared up, and at one point, the Chinese government of the day ultimately did agree to establish a direct hotline to help deconflict military situations that might arise, but then refused to actually implement it. And the Japanese have been trying ever since then to get that agreement kind of back in working shape, get it finalized. The problem that we see here is that historically, because the Chinese Communist Party is in direct control of the People's Liberation Army, they are very careful and concerned lest any foreign actors have direct access to their military and possibly circumvent the Politburo Standing Committee's intentions and the Central Military Commission's intentions in terms of directing the military. So they've typically allowed the hotlines to ring and go unanswered in the midst of a crisis, which of course circumvents the entire purpose of having a hotline. Until the top leadership of the Chinese Communist Party has decided how they want to respond to a crisis, they don't want their military operators picking up the phone and agreeing to anything with a foreign counterpart. So it's unclear whether this hotline will be operationally relevant, or if it's simply a piece of PLA military diplomacy intended to put a lipstick on the pig, as it were, or make China look like it's more cooperative than it actually intends to be.
And quickly, Scott, the 2+2 security talk.
The 2+2. Yeah. So no, that it isn't. Well, it is increasingly routine for the U.S. and Japan to have these kind of very high-level political military dialogues. As you know, unfortunately, Secretary Austin has also come down with COVID, and Japan is dealing with its own surge in Omicron right now. So I believe the gentlemen are going to be having their VTC and talking probably primarily about their overarching view of the strategic landscape in Asia, where China's rise North Korea's missile and nuclear capabilities and Russia's increased aggressiveness are putting a threat to both U.S. and Japanese interests around the region. But whether they are going to finalize any kind of a joint operational plan with respect to Taiwan or not, I think we'll know more in the next few hours.
Gordon, we have about a minute, if you will. Go ahead.
Scott, Japan is increasing its military budget. How controversial is this domestically?
I think inside Japan, there is some degree of resistance to this, but it's a dramatically reduced resistance compared to where we would have been even just a few years ago. There is a recognition that the China and the North Korea threats are growing and not going away. I think there was a real fear after the last U.S. administration, which demanded that Japan quadruple its host nation support, and a fear that the United States might even abandon its global leadership responsibilities. And so Japan recognizes that in order to help reassure Americans that Tokyo and the Japanese people are doing their part, they both want to increase their defense spending overall, as well as increase the contributions Japan makes to help offset the cost of hosting U.S. forces.
Scott Harold at the RAND Corporation, a senior political scientist. Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bennett.
It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. LifeLock is here with tips to help protect your identity. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication, report scams, and update your software. And for comprehensive identity protection, LifeLock is your best choice. LifeLock alerts you to suspicious uses of your personal information and fixes identity theft, guaranteed, or your money back. Start your protection today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. Terms apply.